Okay, hi everybody. Welcome to Coach the Coach Practicum 4. This is Class 3. I'm Jackie. I'm with Group D, and I'm with the October cohort, and it is June 27th, 2016, so we're just waiting for a few folks to show up, but I thought maybe we'd just open it up to any questions that you guys have about anything, about the tools, about coaching in general, and or if you just want to share your experience coaching, you know, in your practice, how that's been going. I'd love to hear that too.
Sure. Jackie, this is Nikki. Can you hear me?
Hi, Nikki. Yes. Yes.
So in my practice, it's interesting. I coach people on really having healthier money mindsets, enabling them to start their own business and pursue their passion in life. And typically, my programs are usually about 3 months long. And as a coach, I definitely, you know, I have kind of my tools in place and the process and expectations of progress along the way and all that stuff because I people are coming to me for results and I definitely want to produce that. But it's interesting as I think about these different tools like feeling your, you know, going into your body and feeling what's right for you. Sometimes people come to me and, you know, they want to move to a new job. They want to leave the soul-crushing job. But they have, you know, there's so many feelings inside of them and there's so many things they have to work out that 3 months isn't always appropriate, but yet they're looking for those results. And I go back and forth as a coach as to how much do I push them and kind of facilitate action, and then how much do I, you know, have them stay in that space where they're almost processing and coming to new beliefs, but they may not go as fast as they want. And I asked this question because I met with my own kind of business coach this weekend, and she was very results focused and saying, well, you need testimonials that say you do such and such and such and such time and all that stuff. So I'm pulled between the world feels of feeling and giving yourself the grace of time and process, but also running a business and having results to show for testimonials so people kind of know what to expect when they come to me. So it's those poles of there's a natural timing to everything, but there's also expectations and results that people want.
Yeah, I totally hear you on that. And that could be a slippery slope there. So,
yeah.
You know, it's really, you know, I've had people like who have signed up like for 4 sessions with me and they want, they're miserable in their job. And I, you know, I actually was just recording a coaching tip of the week that I send out to my list of coaches, and it's on how to convert prospects into clients. And one of the things that I mention is that when you do offer free discovery sessions, I like to do it for the benefit of clarifying what their expectations are and what I can and can't deliver. Because I can't make any kind of a promise about what results they will experience in working with me because so much of it is really up to them.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it is really up to them. So I make sure that in my copy and in my conversations and dialogues with people that I really clarify what they can expect from me. That that if they are working towards a goal, for example, of leaving their job, I will, as their coach, help to mine for and unpack whatever obstacles are getting in the way of them taking that action or moving forward or making progress in that area. And I will also say sometimes it may take you a month, it may take you 3 months, and it may take longer depending on what we unpack and other factors. And so that's why I like to have these discovery sessions, and or if you don't, and that's fine too,
yeah.
it should probably be addressed in,
yeah.
you know, in your copy and or in your first session with somebody. And
mm-hmm.
and so sometimes I'll have an idea, you know, for example, of some limiting beliefs that I think are getting in the way. And
mm-hmm.
I'll use that as an opportunity to demonstrate that they've probably been living with that thought, not for a week or a month, but probably for several years, maybe decades, maybe all of their life. And that thought is like a well-grooved highway in the brain. And I'll explain, you know, how when we think a thought, how it gets wrapped in sheets of Mylon. And it becomes that well-grooved kind of pathway in the brain, and that it's going to take time to create new neural
yeah.
pathways in the brain, and it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
And that there is no time frame. And I'll say, sometimes I've had clients achieve big goals in really short periods of time, and then I've had other clients who achieve goals in longer periods of time. It just really depends on you.
Sure.
So I don't know
yeah,
if that answers your question.
No, that definitely answers my question. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because I used to, at the beginning of the year, I was offering more of like a 30, 60, 90-day package, and people were always be like, oh, 30 days, I can do it in 30 days. But then I really realized that I was not seeing really true change and lasting change for unless I worked with somebody for 3 months. So I almost dialed back on those short-term investments
right.
because people loved the idea of spending less money on it, but they were not benefiting, and I wasn't seeing the results. So we were both kind of leaving it feeling like, okay, well, that was fast and cheap, but we didn't really see results. So,
right,
you know,
yeah, and it depends,
kind of
too, on what – you know, what they mean by results. So if they say,
yeah.
well, I want to, you know, find a new career, and they sign up
yeah.
for 4 sessions with you, that's an opportunity for you to say, you know, this may not happen in 4 sessions. I mean,
yeah.
this is
yeah.
a big transformation,
mm-hmm.
right? So I just want you to know up front,
mm-hmm.
because I do. I have 4, 6, and 8-week packages, and I
mm-hmm.
have a guy who just signed up for me and just finished his 4th session and,
yeah.
you know, really unhappy in his career and wants to change careers. And I used that as an opportunity to say, and that was all he could afford at the time, by the way.
Yeah.
I used
yeah.
it as an opportunity to say, you know, we will likely make some progress. How much progress,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, but it was very complicated. You know, it's
yeah.
there's a lot of thoughts that create a lot of self-doubt, a lot of lack of confidence, and we got to work on those thoughts first so that our clients can have what we call inspired action.
Yeah.
So I would just caution you not to really listen to anyone else besides, including your, you know, your business coach,
yeah.
if that doesn't
mm-hmm.
feel right for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't
yeah.
control the results
mm-hmm.
the clients achieve.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I had some of my own money barriers around thinking people wouldn't want to invest into longer-term coaching, but I found that once I offered longer-term coaching and I attracted people who were more interested in that, the results were much better. But,
okay.
I'm still going through my own money blocks of, am I missing people who I'm just totally out of the league of, you know, their capability of paying for that. But, you know, so it's...
Well, you probably are. And what's
yeah.
what's uncomfortable? Why is that a bad thing?
Because I feel like I could be attracting... Because I don't have as many clients as I would like, and I could potentially be attracting more people, but... I have fully come to the realization that even if it was more, the more people doesn't necessarily feel fulfilling. But I think the gist of that is I am still trying to decouple, maybe it's not decoupling, but I'm trying to really understand where I fit the best with the timing and the type of client and niche. And
right.
I was I was offering the shorter sessions before because I was actually more in an exploratory part of my journey.
I'm giving up
those small packages, but yet it feels it really does feel like the right thing to do, even if I might be walking away from money.
Yeah, and I agree with you. First of all, you're not, and I think this happens to sometimes coaches, we think that, for example, if we pick a niche, we're going to miss out on all those other people who want to be coached. And it's kind of like what you're saying. Well, if I, you know, have just a three-month program, I'm going to miss out on those other people. But maybe those other people aren't your ideal clients.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, offering a four-week program knowing that they're not going to achieve the results they want is a setup for you. Them to feel dissatisfied because they're making the assumption that in 4 weeks they're going to work through all their money stuff. When you know, because you've done the work before, that it really takes 3 months. And that's true. Actually, there's research that's been done that it really does take 3 months for sustainable change to happen. So, listen to your gut, because I think there's that reptilian part of your brain is saying, but I will, you know, something bad will happen if you don't offer those short sessions, right? I will miss people, or I'll miss out on potential viable streams of income. But maybe the opposite is true.
Definitely.
But if you offer it for 3 months and they start to see change, then you'll start to see traction in your business, and you'll start to attract the people who really don't want the quick fix.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, because I was attracting the people who wanted the quick fix, and then I think I felt used, and I don't know if they, you know, felt great leaving it either, but it just didn't feel like the fulfillment I was seeking in giving this as my contribution to the world, you know.
Right, because you're not a quick fix coach. That's not who you are.
Yeah.
So if you want it to set it up where it's conducive for your clients to get real sustainable results in a way that feels really good to you and good to them, then do what feels right for you and offer those three-month programs.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a great question. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I hear you. And I have, you know, coaches who feel the same way about niches too, right? Well, I just do, you know, this particular niche, like weight loss coaching, I'm going to miss out on those people who I would love to work with too, but they say inch wide, mile deep. So you could be known, Rachel, as the person who gets real results with clients in the areas of, you know, money, and you're not going to be that quick. That will be your branding and your reputation, potentially.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
And then you can say to those people who want the quick fix, that's not me. How free would that be to say, that's not me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Awesome. Okay, so we had a couple more people join us. Hi, Meg and Linda. How are you guys?
Good.
Good.
Linda. Hi.
Hi, Linda. So I was just taking some questions before we jumped into coaching. Do you have anything you want to ask or you want to share, anything that came up from you from last class?
Not for me. I don't think so.
Okay. Or share about your coaching.
Not that I can think of.
Well, I want to give you guys a little bit of a shout out and let you know that for those of you who've been coaching in this practicum and continue to volunteer, that I admire your courage. It's not easy to coach in front of people, but it's going to be the best practice that you have, because if you can coach under these circumstances with people listening, me listening, you're going to do so well out there kind of in the real world. So, you know, I just want to just reinforce and invite those of you who haven't coached to raise their hands, because you really learned so much about coaching on this call, and when you're willing to not, you know, not coach perfectly. That is really, you know, your willingness to fail in front of other people. And I hate to use the word fail because it brings up so much for people, but it really doesn't bring anything up for me. But your willingness to make mistakes or fail or kind of go down cul-de-sacs, as I say, really requires a lot of confidence. I mean, that's really what confidence to me is defined as, the willingness to not, to look, you know, maybe less than stellar. And it's an opportunity, I think, also for those who suffer from any kind of perfectionism. And I never used to think I was a perfectionist until I started coaching, when I realized that I was sometimes afraid to look bad, but that it was an opportunity for me when I got feedback, and I got lots of feedback on my coaching. I used to send my recordings into my coach mentor, and she listened to me coach talk about feeling vulnerable and exposed. But it was really on another level, such a good opportunity for me when I got that feedback that sometimes stung, to be nicer and kinder to myself. And I wasn't very nice and kind to myself. I was always kind of a hole poker and looking for where I didn't do well and where I was falling short. Because, like many of you, you might suffer from the I'm not good enough thought. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that, that I hope that you guys continue kind of to show up for yourselves in this way. And I know it takes a lot of courage, and appreciate how open you've been to my feedback, and hope that you guys use it as an opportunity to inform you on how to be better and not use it against yourself, like I did.
But even if
this is Linda. I had with a coaching buddy, we were trading and came up with a limiting belief, which that we did the work on, which was I shouldn't risk appearing incompetent in front of other people. And you know, it was coming up in something not coaching related that I was doing, but I mean, it's so powerful that, you know, not wanting to look like an idiot. And there's so much behavior that it can end up influencing. So it's really useful to identify that and to play with the turnarounds for that, and then have practice, you know, in environments where I am going to risk appearing incompetent in front of other people and, you know, the sky doesn't fall. So anyway,
yeah,
it's helpful.
Yeah, and it's what you make that mean, right? Like,
oh, of course,
even
right.
that person you were coaching is like, what would be so bad about looking incompetent? I mean, so almost treating that as neutral. So you're incompetent coaching, or incompetent speaking, or you're incompetent whatever that thing is, and what's so uncomfortable around that? What do they make that mean?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. But I know that brings up a lot of stuff for people, right? And it's sometimes why people don't show up and aren't willing to raise their hand, is because, you know, what gets triggered in them, right, is I'm going to look bad, or I'm never going to be a good enough coach, or they use it as evidence against themselves that they're never going to make progress, as though there's an innate kind of talent or this fixed ability that you're born with or not born with. Actually, there's a concept coined by Carol Dweck who talks about the fixed mindset and the growth mindset. And that totally, if you guys are interested, that totally changed my life, because I used to think that, you know, all the coaches I admired, like Martha Beck and Brooke Castillo and all these people, were farther along than I was and had more experience than I had. Just, like, knew how to, like, they were talented. They were gifted. They had something I didn't have. And not realizing that that was, A, not true, and B, that they put a lot of work and effort into mastering their craft. And that really comes from a growth mindset, that our ability is malleable. Our brain is plastic. It's malleable, which was the best news I ever heard. Because I'm like, okay, I don't have to quit, because I used, and I did quit coaching at one point, but I thought that I just didn't have what everybody else had. So I'm just sharing that with you because, you know, I want you to, you know, sometimes sharing my story helps coaches, you know, with their stories, whatever they're telling themselves. So anyway, just a little something I wanted to offer you guys. Okay, any
Carol?
Yes.
Oh, I was just gonna ask, you said Carol Dweck, did I hear that right?
Carol Dweck, Dweck. You could probably Google her. And so one of the things that she said that really made an impression on me is the person who believes in the fixed mindset, that their ability is kind of made of their talent and their gift, and would say, I'm not good enough. But a person coming from a growth mindset would instead say, I'm getting better. The difference is huge.
Yeah.
Right? So if on these calls anything like that gets triggered for you, like, oh, it's just not going to be good enough, or I screwed up, or I made mistakes, or I'm not understanding these concepts, or it's not all coming together, it's not gelling, or I'm overwhelmed. Remember, you're so much farther along than you were just a few months ago, and you are getting better. You know so much more than you knew when you first started. And that feels a lot different than, oh, I'm just not good enough, right? Because there's no room for growth from that perspective. So, yes, Carol Dweck, she writes, I don't know the name of her book, but if you Google it, you'll find it. All right. So, having said that, any burning questions before we jump into some coaching? Okay. So who wants to, having said what I just said, who wants to volunteer to coach?
I will if nobody else will, but I coach the first class, so I
okay.
want to
Who's
give
this?
Somebody else a chance. This is Rachel.
Rachel. Okay, awesome. And who wants to be Rachel's client? Nikki, Meg, Linda. How about Linda? Are you up for it?
I coached last week, and then also I'm like having trouble thinking of something to be coached on.
Okay, maybe you leave that up to Rachel. How would you feel about that?
We can try it.
Okay. Here's the thing, you guys. I mean, you're gonna have clients in the real world who might sign up for a 3-month coaching session with you, and you might coach them one day, and they're gonna say, "I got nothing." So, you know, we don't want to put the burden on the client to bring something to the call. That's not their job. It's really the coach's job. So, and it's an opportunity, actually, Linda, for Rachel to really, you know, kind of figure out how she's going to coach you when you don't have anything maybe that's readily accessible right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to try it?
Sure.
Okay, awesome. Okay, Rachel. So this is going to, you already know a little something, right?
Uh-huh.
So my suggestion, and I really suggest this to all of you, is how you start off the call with a client, even in this class, makes a big difference. The energy that you bring to that first, you know, thing that you say or you ask. So I really want you to think about how you want to start off the session. So rather than saying, what's going on today, how can you really step into your leadership shoes as a coach? And maybe ask a question or do something that's maybe a little bit more powerful and a little bit more of a reflection of your role.
Huh. Okay.
No pressure, though. And if you want ideas, I'm here for you. So.
Yes. If you
and by the way, how do you want me to be with you, Rachel, when you, as you coach Linda? I forgot that part.
Yeah, I would love for you to be my trusted advisor, so we can break any time. I would like, I'm not attached to, not because I don't trust myself, but just because I feel like this is a great learning opportunity.
Okay, awesome.
So,
all right, I'm ready when you are.
Okay. Well, Linda, it's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, you too. Hi.
Hi. Hi. I would love to hear what you would like more of in your day-to-day or your life in general or day-to-day, whatever applies.
Sorry, I missed a crucial word in the sentence.
What would you like more of is what I'm curious to know today.
More of. Well. I think I would like a little more calm, and peace is probably a good word.
Okay. Do you want to say anything more about that? Like a specific example where it'd be nice to have a little more calm and peace?
Sure. So one thing that's happening is right, like today, I am getting ready to move out of an apartment that I was renting when I was working in the area in Connecticut, and I've quit my job and no longer need to stay here anymore. And so I'm in the middle of moving and packing things into boxes and feeling that, you know, like, am I going to get it all done? And, you know, just that, like, so that task is like right in front of me and it's going pretty well, but it's almost like part of how I go after getting things done when there's a deadline is stress out about it, like that's gonna help. So anyway, that's in the background right now. And I guess the calm and peace, the other thing that it made me think of is, I generally really, like, I'm really conscious about wanting to avoid taking in too much media, you know, these days, like news, and, you know, I just find that I don't want to be incited to fear, and I don't find it constructive to, you know, I don't want someone else who I think is pushing for the pushing my buttons or pushing the lowest common denominator to get there. You know, I like want to, but I'm finding I'm so upset about some stuff happening in the world and, you know, kind of what I fear may be coming. And I'm, And I'm troubled by that because I don't feel that that's constructive. You know, I feel very one-sided. Like, you know, can't people see that this is, you know, blah, blah, blah is wrong and blah, blah, blah is right and like, or better for humanity or, you know, and then, you know, I think through that, well, you know, by definition, everybody who has a position thinks they're right and kind of join with energy that way. But I'm agitated. I'm letting the things that are happening in the world, you know, I feel really agitated and not peaceful. And I don't think, and then I, you know, I notice that I'm like getting antsy and, what, you know, kind of starting to mutter at other drivers when I'm on the road, and like, so those are some of the behaviors. And I guess, you know, I was hesitating bringing it up because it feels like sort of a global issue, but I guess what I'm telling myself is, well, there's nothing I can do about it. You know, like the world seems to be going in these particular directions, and it doesn't resonate. But there's, what I'm telling myself is, there's nothing I can do about it, and then I feel even less peaceful and more agitated. So those are, so my move is like the micro deal, and then this, all this other stuff is the macro.
Gotcha. Yeah. So more calm and peace because we got the move. Sounded like you said something. There's a, you tend to stress out when there's a deadline. So maybe there's a habit of going into, this is my hunch, when you have a deadline, you tend to stress out and pay attention more to the bigger things like politics. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Well, that's interesting. Huh. that's interesting. I hadn't really thought that, but yeah, I think you're right. Like the going into a, you know, having an event coming up in the immediate term that feels stressful kind of raises that stress response, and then I'm kind of more open to having that agitation get fueled by you know, the world stuff.
Mm-hmm. So when you're feeling that agitation, where do you feel it in your body? If you were to go in, kind of take a deep breath right now and just kind of do a scan and ground yourself with your feet, where do you feel that agitation?
I feel it especially like a tightness in my chest and a constriction in my throat. In fact, I even have a bit of a sore throat today. And then actually as you just invited me to go into my body, I start to feel like I wanted to cry, like, you know, squinching up my face and a tightness behind my eyes and just like a, and like pressing my lips together and kind of just like so that, yeah, that's how it's feeling in my body.
Okay. And you've calibrated your body before, is that right? Is that correct? Have you calibrated on it? So if you were to rate this on your body scale, like negative 10 being the very thing you would never want to repeat again and positive 10 being something you'd love to do over again, can you kind of gauge where this agitation would fall on that body scale?
So it feels like a minus 3 or minus 4. You know what's where I feel grounded and calm in my lower body, like like it's almost like the my ground feels okay, and it's just like the upper part of my body that's in the middle of a storm. So that's why it's not a more negative number, because I don't feel I don't feel like my entire body is in the same space. It's like it's all concentrated in my chest and throat and head.
Okay. So that's interesting. So your lower body feels.
Sorry, I missed that last word. My lower body feels. I can't hear.
Rachel, are you there? Uh-oh. Oh, Rachel have got disconnected.
No.
Okay. Well, maybe Rachel will jump back on. So, Linda, you didn't think anything was going on, huh?
Well, you know, yeah, I did.
I know. It's just, I say that to myself, too, and then it's like, but ask me a question. Okay, well, hopefully Rachel will jump in. Here, I think she just
I'm came. Back.
Hey, Rachel.
Hey there.
Hi.
We're waiting
hey
for
there.
You.
Sorry about
okay.
that.
No
drop.
Worries.
So I lost you when you said your lower body feels, and then I didn't get the adjective.
Oh, I think I was mirroring back what, kind of repeating what you were saying, that you do feel connected in your lower body. It's just your upper body in this situation. So you said just that's where you feel the energy of a negative 3 or negative 4. Tell me where I'm wrong on that. That's
yeah, you're right. That's how it feels.
Okay, so knowing that, does that bring any comfort to know that it's more your upper body and that it's different like that? And does that bring any comfort? Let's start there.
Okay, I'm going to jump in for a second.
Because I'm leaving.
Yeah, so Rachel, you're doing an awesome, awesome job. Love that you asked for the example, and I love that you went into your body and you're getting, you know, some of this agitation is being kind of localized, right, to that upper part of her body, right? So, and the lower part of her body is just kind of ground and calm. So I probably wouldn't really ask that question. Does that bring you any kind of peace or comfort?
Yeah.
Because it's what purpose is that serving?
No, I know. I don't really know where to go next. That's why.
Right. Okay. So good. You don't know where to go next. So this is where I can help you. So what as your coaching or what do you want to get to, Rachel? What's your objective right now?
Well, she said at the beginning she'd like to feel more calm and peace. So I'm
right.
Wanting
right.
to lead her there if that's possible.
Yes, exactly. Right? So you asked a great question. What do you want more? If she says calm and peace, now you know what you're working toward, right? Which is great.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what her goal is or her desire is. You know where she's at now, right? Because she said,
right.
I'm agitated, and she just articulated where she's feeling that in her body, and then there's some emotion that was coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
She even feels kind of mm-hmm. like she could cry, right?
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. what you want to do is coach, you know where she is, and you know where she wants to be. So you want to coach the gap, what's getting in the way of her not feeling more at peace and more calm. And I think you threw out a brilliant, brilliant hypothesis that perhaps when she's stressed kind of on that micro level, that she tends to maybe shift her focus on things that are really outside of her control. which probably suggests to me that maybe she's feeling a little overwhelmed or out of control with this move, right? So, but here you are. You stopped at this tightness in her chest and this constriction in her throat. So how do you want to move forward? One of the things that you could do, and this is what I would do, I would ask her maybe how this feeling of agitation, so she's just feeling tight in her chest and she's constricted, I might ask her, how does that feeling want to make her react? And then see if there's maybe a thought, if she just sits with that feeling, if there's a thought or thoughts that are bubbling up for her in relation to this move.
Okay.
That maybe is causing her to feel maybe a little emotional. Which would make sense, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe a little overwhelmed. Okay, so you want to try that?
Right, yeah.
Let's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, Linda, he's taking a deep breath here, kind of connecting back. So when you're feeling the feeling of agitation that we described, that you described so beautifully, how does that want to make you react? How do you have any behaviors or anything that comes up that you react when you feel that way?
Well, how I behave is I, you know, my movements, my, you know, the way my body moves in space becomes sort of jerky, and so I end up like, you know, banging my arms into things and like not watching where I'm going, and then that sort of, you know, on top of, you know, moving sort of involves a lot of physical activity that's not typical for me, just in terms of the types of things you're doing, you know, taping up boxes and moving things that don't normally get moved. And so when I'm also sort of agitated and I'm jerking around, I like it's, you know, it feels a little unsafe. I don't know when I might drop the scissors on my foot or something. And then I think, as I mentioned, I'm also noticing, that I'm like very quick when I'm driving. I'm really quick to be annoyed at other drivers, and that's a pattern. Anyway, so I'm just very quick to feel just kind of frustrated, and I don't feel as though I'm blaming other people personally for it. It's just this like short fuse feeling. So that's how I'm reacting to just stimuli. I think a couple of hours ago, I think I yelled at the pair of scissors, actually. You know, it didn't talk back, but those behaviors kind of feed on themselves.
Okay. So I'm gonna ask a question. It might sound weird, but does this move feel unsafe to you in any way?
No. No, it doesn't feel unsafe. It's something that I've been planning or, you know, kind of had in mind that I would do for many months now, and timing wise and kind of all of that, you know, it feels really good. And I, the place I'm moving out of wasn't a full-time residence. I was on the East Coast really often for work. And so it was that sort of a thing. And so it's, you know, I'm not relocating my whole life, or, you know, my primary residence is still where it is. but I can say I guess I've been knowing that I would do this for a long time, and now that I'm doing it, it's a little, I guess there's a little more, you know, I'm saying goodbye to, you know, a whole era of my life, and I've been doing that for a while, but this is like one more relatively large symbol of it. And I'm not sorry to be moving, because I won't miss paying the rent, and I'm looking forward to other things that are next, but it's closing a chapter, and I feel like I've been like separating from my old work life and from that whole era for a while, and I kind of think that I'm over it, and maybe not completely, this is certainly a, like I said, a symbol of, and a reality of what was, and it's coming to a close, and I don't want to feel emotional about it. I want to just be done with it. But earlier today I ran into an old work colleague who it was really nice to see, and so those little tendrils of emotion are kind of still, they're catching me by surprise.
So I have a hunch like that with this, the behavior that you described, and with everything that's going on, I have a hunch that you have some sadness, and you're putting out there like, and it's like, you know, frustrated, but I think it's still, to me, like there's sadness, and maybe a little bit more than you want, like you said, or but there's sadness underneath. Tell me where I'm wrong. But it's very real and very kind of potent for you right now. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I didn't expect it, and I didn't really know that I was. Yeah, I just feel a little sad, or maybe medium sad. Mm-hmm. And not in a, you know, it feels, I'm dropping into my body here and mm-hmm. paying attention to how it feels. So what I wanted to say is it feels pretty much like clean pain. Like I feel good. I feel like the change of moving on from that job and et cetera really is been good and is good and all of that. And so I don't have a, it doesn't feel fraught. I just feel sad.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to ask what sounds kind of, what's so uncomfortable about being sad with this move?
So just feeling sad is is just itself. Like it, like when I feel into it, you know, it's, I feel it and then it kind of moves. I guess what makes me want to resist it is either like the feeling sad and it just like being in the moment just is what it is. But I think I have this idea that I shouldn't feel sad anymore, that I should be over it, and I don't know why. So I guess it's just like, well, if I'm feeling sad about this change, you know, how much longer am I going to feel sad? So it's like, yeah, I've got some kind of idea that, I don't know. It feels like maybe I've got this random timetable that I had somehow already decided would be involved with this change, and that if I'm not following the timetable, then like all bets are off. And so something about how much time I might feel sad is there's something there that's catching me, or kind of actually well, I was gonna say maybe that is what's contributed to agitation, but I feel like actually maybe the agitation was more like just not wanting to feel this.
I have a hunch I'm going to throw out there, a thought that might be happening, something along the lines of, I shouldn't be sad because good things are happening. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Oh, God, you, like, hit it on the head. Because good things are happening, so I don't think I should be sad. You know, like what comes up is there's no reason, you know, or there's no reason I should be sad. So I it's funny that there's a lot of should around this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Rachel, I'm going to give you another minute or two. See if you can frame up a painful thought for her, because I think you just got some refinement here.
Okay. We'll get even more concise, sift it down a little bit.
Well, she just gave you, she threw out a brilliant hat, and she just gave you some information. So see if you can...
Timetable, yeah.
Yeah, see if... Well, she said there's no reason...
Right.
...that she should be sad, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that's it.
Yeah.
So if you were going to do the work with her, for example, you would first frame it up, just like you've been doing. Okay. So I have a hunch that what's really painful for you is this thought, and then repeat it back to her, tell me where I'm wrong.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So, Linda, the thought that could be feeling true for you at the moment and creating all of the things we were just talking about is something like, I shouldn't be sad because there's no reason for it to, there's no reason for me to be sad, so I shouldn't be. That's a little bit lengthy, but tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like, or something like, I shouldn't be sad when I don't see any reason to be, or something. It's like whether or not I get to be sad has to have a rational explanation. I didn't know that, but that's, so yeah, I mean, I think we could play with words, but you've hit on it.
So Rachel, really this would be a good opportunity to see if you can now make craft a short, succinct, declarative belief.
Okay.
And don't make it difficult. So it could be just, so what I'm hearing you say is, there needs to be a reason for my sadness, or I need to justify my sadness.
Okay. Okay, yeah. So, Linda, you're doing great, by the way. What I'm hearing...
You too.
thank you. Without... There's no... I can't be sad unless there's a reason.
Yeah.
Sure, I'm wrong.
Yeah. That's it. They're yeah. I'm not allowed to be sad unless there's a good reason, or there needs to be a reason for me to, for it to be okay for me to feel sad.
Okay, so it's not okay for you to be sad unless there's a reason.
It's not okay for me to be sad unless there's a good reason.
Good reason. Hmm. And good, define good, like logical? Is that, like, detached from emotion?
Well, no, I mean, like, good, like a valid reason, you know, like,
okay.
Like, but so maybe just reason in and of itself is fine.
Okay, so I can't be sad unless, or I shouldn't.
Unless there's a valid reason, yeah.
Unless there's a valid reason. Jackie, that still doesn't.
Yep, that's good.
Right. Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, I can't be sad unless there's a valid reason. Because think, you know, you always want to, you know, think of the turnarounds too when you're working a thought, right?
Yeah.
I can't be sad unless there's a valid reason. I can be sad without a valid reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I get to be sad with or without a valid reason. You know, so, and any one of these probably would have worked, like, I need a reason to be sad. I actually like that one a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't need a reason to be sad. It's just a little less cumbersome to work with something that's super, that really just captures the essence. But you want to make sure, of course, that resonates with Linda. And I also like your instinct in wanting to maybe explore, you know, what would constitute a good reason or a valid reason.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Gorgeous job. So I am going to hold my feet back, and I'm just going to ask Linda to start and give some feedback to you, Rachel.
Okay.
You know the drill.
Rachel, that was excellent. I felt really listened. I felt that you were really listening to me. I felt that it was sort of a surprise to me. And your hunches were like right on. So I felt like, you know, I felt you were really taking what I was saying and then making some connections that I hadn't thought of. And I think, like, what I can see overall is just that I'm, you know, I really liked that you brought me into my body and then there was a lot there for me to notice and then just where we were with the framing of the thought, I feel like what I'm seeing is that I'm kind of attaching some judgment and a bunch of thinking stuff to something that's an emotion. And that I didn't know I was doing that. So anyway, that was really useful because, you know, emotions are what they are, and there's a lot that I can take from this that I do feel more calm and more peaceful, and that I have access to grow that feeling. So I'm really grateful. Thank you.
Beautiful. Oh, thank you.
Rachel, yeah, good feedback, Linda. Rachel, what did you think? How'd you feel about that session?
I feel good. That was, felt like, Linda showed up and was really present, and she, was really, had some beautiful honesty and connection with her body, and, was able to articulate a lot, which gave me, you know, more to work with. And so I really appreciate that. And
what do you think you did well?
I feel like I stayed with her really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able, actually, I could feel her agitation. So, like, my throat got tight. So it was, I had to be mindful to keep myself grounded, and where I got a little stuck was coaching the gap, which you described, made a lot of sense. Like, and so using that want to, what is she, how does she react, was a good way to get out of that spot where I didn't know where to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because then I got a lot more information, and which Linda said really well, how she gets kind of hurts herself. She's unsafe a bit. And so.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's good. I've had a little bit of difficulty with this before of getting the thought framed up in a succinct way, and I tend to follow the client of in that situation, in the thought, because it's the thought that we're going to be working with, and I feel like it's important for them to really buy into it and have it be theirs.
Definitely. I agree.
So I felt like we got there today, but in the past, it turns out, though, sometimes to be a little clumsy if I don't really refine it, and this one was more succinct. But
that's the way you learn how to do it, is by kind of working through that. It kind of feels clumsy and awkward because you haven't had a lot of practice doing it. But the more you practice, you know, the better you'll be at it. And so you want to really just keep in mind that, you know, as the coach, you want to remember, if you're going to take this thought and apply the work to it, you want to be able to make sure that it is succinct enough so when you get to the turnarounds, those turnarounds are going to be potent. Right, so sometimes the way you language it is really important. There is no reason for me to be sad, or I need a reason to be sad. You know, why is that not true? I don't need a reason to be sad. Right?
Right.
I need to justify my sadness. So the wordier it gets, sometimes the more, you know, challenging, and the more it potentially can lose the potency of the turnaround. So I agree with you. You want to make sure that you're always checking in with your client to make sure that even if you modify the language, that it resonates with them. And so sometimes I'll say, well, does this still resonate with you if when I say you should have a reason to be sad? Like taking the validity word out of it. And she might say, no, I need a valid reason to send, in which case then I would use it, because you're absolutely 100% correct. Because if they're not feeling that, if they're not believing that thought that you reframed, there's no use in doing the work on it. So.
Just asking if it resonates. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they can
Okay. So before I jump in, any observers, Kristen, Nikki, Tiffany, Meg, have any feedback for Rachel?
This is Nikki, and my feedback for Rachel of what I really liked was how she opened up the session, because she didn't have necessarily that one main thing to go with.
Mm-hmm.
And then how she, it's almost like she could feel that there was an overwhelming theme of anxiety, and how she progressively went deeper and deeper into that and really got to the crux of it by following this work thread that she had. So I thought she did a beautiful job incorporating the body and incorporating really good questions about what was going on around this situation with work, because I saw in myself I would have jumped to assumptions about the work situation, that I may have asked more questions about my own assumptions rather than leading the client to their own story that they are telling themselves. So I thought she did a nice job of not putting out too many assumptive questions and really leading the client to her own place of where this painful thought was for her.
Yeah. So she really remained very neutral,
mm-hmm.
hearing you say. And you noticed that you might have had some assumptions yourself about, you know, maybe based on your own bias or personal experience.
Yeah,
that
and
might have
impacted. Yeah, I recently went through a work transition similar mm-hmm. to that, and I feel like I would have hopped in with a lot more assumptions, and she didn't, and I thought that was great.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. Good feedback. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Kristen, and I was going to say hi, Rachel, because I haven't worked with Rachel in a while, but back in the fall I did, and Rachel's really good and strong at holding a space and staying grounded and making it safe to be in that space.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Mm, thank you.
Yeah. So let me jump in here. I agree with everyone's feedback, with Linda and Kristen and Meg. And I thought you did a beautiful job, really, really gorgeous. I agree that you really tracked her very well. I really felt like you were in such a grounded, very, like I just said, very neutral place. And this was just such a good example of, like what Kristen just said, kind of holding the space and letting the kind of session go where it was meant to go. It was so fluid. It felt like a dance. I had no idea where this was going to go at all. I don't think you did either, Rachel.
I don't
think Linda did. And it's funny because when you got disconnected, I said, Linda, and you didn't think you had anything, right? So, you know, we were kind of giggling about that. So, and I just loved the session for so many reasons, you know, from the get-go that Linda said, well, I don't really have anything, and, you know, look what we uncovered. And I think I love that you start out asking for a specific example, and it sounded like they were almost like two different tracks, but I love how you wove that together by throwing out your hunch, which I also thought was interesting. I don't think I would have come up with that. You said it sounds like you're stressed out when you have a deadline, you know, like moving out, you become stressed and you start to pay attention to those bigger things, like probably you know, what she's seen on television and stuff. Tell me where I'm wrong. And that really hit home for Linda. That was really, really good. So you have really strong instincts. Really strong. Mm. And there was just that one point, Rachel, where you weren't sure where to go after you checked in with her body. And then I made the suggestion that to ask her how she reacts, and look what happened.
Yeah.
Right? So then she started talking about what happens with her body and how she treats the other people on the road, and, you know, she yells at inanimate objects like her scissors, right? Then she said, and she made the mention of feeling unsafe, and I loved that you went with that. Because that was my marmoset. I'm like, I wonder where she's feeling unsafe. Now we know what's causing her to feel unsafe is that she's resisting her feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah? So the only thing I would say to you is, instead of asking a leading question, does this make you feel more unsafe to you in any way? That I would love to see you put that out as a hunch.
I should have been a hunch. Yeah.
Yeah, so my hunch is you feel unsafe in some way. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Yes.
Okay, so that would be the only constructive feedback I have to give you. Then she said, I don't want to feel emotional about it. And love that you said, I have a hunch you just feel some sadness. So spot on. And then you impressed me even more by saying, what's so uncomfortable about being sad? Because you knew that part of this was clean pain, but you picked up on the resistance and you asked about it. That was gorgeous. And then Linda was saying, well, I think it's clean pain, but now she's starting to recognize with that question that you asked that there was some dirty pain in there, which you unpacked, distilled, and refined into a painful thought. That is how we coach. Absolutely spectacular. I just love how this all unfolded. Anyway, I couldn't be more pleased. You should be really proud of yourself for the way that this unfolded and how, again, your instincts, your energy, creating that safe space, the connections you made, the hunches you threw out, made progress. Everything that you did made progress in the session.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There was nothing that you asked except that one question where I kind of put you back on track. There's nothing that you asked that did not make progress in the session. It was always had that momentum of moving forward. So it was beautiful.
Thank you.
I'm just proud as a peacock. I mean, I don't know if you heard me. I'm like, oh, God. Oh, yes, that's so great. Couldn't help myself. Okay. So I let you go on a while because I really wanted, this was such a good demonstration, such a good opportunity for you all to see, and for you, Rachel, to have the experience, and Linda have the experience being coached, kind of what a fuller session might look like. And this is usually the hardest part, I think, is because here Linda presented with two pretty big things, right? Kind of moving and maybe the overwhelm and, you know, this deadline and the stress and then all this stuff, the media, what's going on in the media. And there was a thought in there in the beginning, there's nothing I can do about it. You could have grabbed that and gotten that, but you didn't.
Yeah, I wrote it down, but
So there are a lot of different ways to go. And what it really came down to was not so much what she was saying, but what she was feeling and the resistance, which was what was causing the lack of peace and what else did she say? A calm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, awesome. Anybody have questions about this session or anything that you guys would have done differently? I know that.
Jackie, I have a question.
Sure.
This is Nikki. Yeah. The question I have, you know,
it's interesting because, like, I shared my niche earlier being that money mindset niche.
Yes.
And if you are to work with somebody for, like, 3 months and you have this niche, and let's say the niche is to help them, like mine, like, have that good relationship with money and potentially find a more fulfilling career, but yet sometimes you'll have sessions where you don't really know exactly where it's going to go like this, and it can totally be a different topic like this. Like, maybe it is some feelings that they're feeling rather than money. They're feeling something about a relationship. I guess I don't even know what my exact question is here, but is that, like, when you have a coaching program and you have a niche and you have a goal, do you find that you still have a lot of these very open, different, categorical conversations with people that you would have never even thought you'd end up talking about relationships, but now you are, even though you're a money coach or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that can happen. And, you know, the way you do anything is the way you do everything, and that's really important to keep in mind. Because if they're operating in ways that maybe aren't really serving your client in their relationship or in their career or in their, you know, as a parent, for example, or as a daughter or sister, it's very connected to their relationship with money, right?
Mm.
You buy into the mindset that the way you do anything is the way you do everything. And I don't think you can just say, well, I'm just working with you, and I'm not saying that this is what you're saying, but I'm not just working with you on money because, you know, our life, we can't separate all those segments in our life. They bleed out into and impact other areas of our life. So how you are with money is often going to be how you are in your other relationships and vice versa.
And I think that
will happen, and that has happened to me a lot, where people hire me, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, I want help with my relationship or with my husband, and then we end up spending a couple sessions with their relationship with their kid or something, and that wasn't why they came to me, but that reveals so much.
And I think that's something.
Go ahead.
Oh, I think that's kind of the beautiful thing, too, is even though you might pick a niche and feel, like, stifled by only talking about that topic, it does – I find that it balloons into all different things so often that I wonder, am I not holding them accountable enough to the actions for the necessary progress in this realm? But really it is, like you're saying, all so interconnected and thematic in the issues that they have.
Yeah, yeah. And you know the person who's maybe – using that as a distraction because they don't want to, you know, talk about or make progress or maybe feel, you know, maybe you're getting kind of deep into what money is, how money is triggering stuff for them. So you know the difference. And, you know, sometimes if we do get off track, I think it's perfectly okay to say, you know, I know you didn't hire me to coach you around your relationship with your boss, that you really hired me to get clean about money. But, you know, but you brought this up at the last couple sessions, and I want to make sure that you want some coaching around this. I think it would be really helpful for you, but I want to make sure that you're okay with it.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
It's perfectly okay to, and I have done that. I've had someone who was having trouble. I think she was a coach with her practice, and help but notice that she had so many problems in her relationship with her husband that that was really impeding her ability to move forward because she was so her time and energy and her resources were going into her marriage, and her marriage was big trouble. And she said to me, I don't want to talk about my marriage. And yet it kept coming up.
Yeah.
And she wasn't able to make any progress in her career because of it. And I said, I think that this is getting in the way, and I think if
if this isn't addressed, you don't have the resources.
Yes.
You're so preoccupied with what's going on here.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, and, you know, I coached her for I don't know how long, not very long, because she pretty much said, I won't go here. And I was pretty much of the mindset, well, it keeps coming up. And so
yeah.
I can work with you on this, but we're going to still run into the same stop sign.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you'd be amazed when that stuff comes up. It is very connected.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah,
yeah, I actually had a similar situation where somebody wanted to make more money, but we kept talking about the really bad relationship they have with their spouse, and very similar, did not want to talk about it. And as a coach, I had to really look within myself if I wanted to continue to have that relationship when I knew that it was not going to necessarily be fruitful given that big obstacle they didn't want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes those relationships will just kind of peter out, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's been my experience. And they're
mm-hmm.
also not my ideal client. I want to work with people
mm-hmm.
who are open to me coaching them in all areas of their life. Not that I would go ahead and, you know, and do that. I want to coach them towards the results they want. But I want to
yeah.
know that they're open enough to be coached around a potential obstacle
yeah.
that I see that is getting in the way of them achieving that transformation.
Yes. Yeah.
So, good
Great.
Question.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So anybody else have any questions about tools, about Rachel and Linda's session? Thank you, Linda, by the way, for there was a reason I
thank you. That was really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, and you know what I loved about the session too that just reminded me is like, you know, this clean pain, dirty pain, right? And you will, so, and that's kind of what was going on for you, Linda, is that you recognize that this was clean pain. And then as Rachel continued to coach you, you started to have the awareness that there was some dirty pain in here. And, of course, you don't coach people around clean pain. You just let them maybe share that sadness where they're feeling it, you know. You can certainly ask, what are you going to miss about this era? You know, you can ask those questions. But first, you've got to address the dirty pain, the thoughts that are
mm-hmm.
getting in the way of you experiencing that feeling. Because you even said it's not the feeling. The feeling, when you allow the feeling, when you allow yourself to feel those feelings, you see that it's like energy. It just moves through you.
Mm-hmm.
But where you get stuck is with this thought that you need a reason or a good reason to feel sad, which causes you to resist it.
Mm-hmm.
And that resistance, by the way, everybody, shows us when resistance comes up for yourself or your clients, it's really telling you where you need to be kinder and more compassionate with yourself.
Yeah,
that makes sense, Linda?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So you're not showing yourself any kind of compassion for what you're experiencing, that this is an end of an era, and giving yourself permission to feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a reason to feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. It's just an emotion.
Yeah, and I didn't know I had that resistance, and so it was very, very illuminating to.
I know, right?
Realize that, yeah.
Yeah. I know. I think that's true for a lot of us, though.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's, you know, if we're, especially considering your circumstances, right? So you're busy packing up the house, right? And you're not, and you're moving, and you're maybe distracting yourself. Or maybe you're not. You're just, you know, you're involved in the details of moving. So you haven't really mm-hmm. probably given yourself permission to explore that. So anyway, just I wanted to just give a little shout out between, because we don't coach clean pain, but we do coach dirty pain, and that's exactly what Rachel did
mm-hmm.
today. Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. All right. Anybody else before I promised myself I wasn't going over, and that's why I did not squeeze another session in. So it's kind of nice, though, isn't it, to be able to kind of debrief and process and hear all of your voices. So I wanted to create some space and room for that today as well. So before I say goodbye, any questions or burning comments or before I bid you adieu?
It's Kristen. I was just thinking as you're talking about clean and dirty pain again. Two things. One, that the dirty pain was just that she wasn't allowing herself to feel the clean pain, which is kind of what we've been saying. But
the dirty pain was not that she wasn't allowing herself. It was the thought that was creating the resistance and not allowing herself. So,
right. Well, I think
Yeah. Okay.
That's
yeah.
what I meant. But the dirty pain was the thought about it. But
right, correct.
The just didn't have permission. Felt like I had to. So that's lovely. That's a nice way to see that, and sort of a nice window into allowing yourself to go to that space and have those emotions. And also that flicker when Linda, when you said that you felt that sadness and then it moved. Also a great reminder that, as Jackie just pointed out again, that it's just an emotion and it does move through your body. And I remember one of our calls, I guess it was a lizard lounge where we did that, where we just sat with the whatever the emotion was and watched it. And I don't know if it takes 90 seconds to move out or whatever, but it was just that relief of knowing that it's not going to stay, you know, that it will move if you just kind of breathe into it and let it be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that was Jill Bolte Taylor wrote in her book, My Stroke of Insight. If you haven't read it, do go out and read it. And she said it takes 90 seconds to process an emotion.
Mm.
If mm-hmm. we don't have any, you know, thoughts about it, you know.
Well, I was thinking mentally process that, but when that was pointed out back in the Lizard Lounge and it came up again today with that just that second that Linda said it, that it just physically moved through, you know, you felt it move. I think that brings a little bit of relief to the resistance, allows you to let go, or allows me to let go of that, you know, if I start to get anxious about having that emotion. And it's like, oh, it's okay. It's just going to move through me, and I'll just watch it.
Mm-hmm. If you gave yourself permission to feel your feelings.
Right.
Yeah. So one of the strategies that I use, by the way, is if I have a client who is afraid to feel their feelings, and we all are to some degree, I ask the client to make the feeling as big as possible. Because oftentimes we're afraid to feel our feelings because we believe that they're going to overwhelm us, or we can't handle it, right? And we're afraid that we're going to feel out of control. And Linda even said that, like, when is this going to end, right?
Yeah, and never come back.
Right, and when is this going to end? It's like there's this fear that it's going to overtake us.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I will often ask my clients, I want you to make that feeling as big as possible. So, you know, think about that thing that triggers, that situation that triggers that sadness. And it could be maybe their pet passed away, or they're moving away from their best friend, or in this Linda's case, you know, thinking about, you know, all the people she's going to say goodbye to this end of this era. And really make that feeling as big, really exaggerate it. Make it as big as possible. So it feels almost counterintuitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to push it down, so I'm going to make it bigger. And ironically, when they make it bigger, they feel more in control, and the feeling starts to shrink.
Mm-hmm.
So the opposite of what we fear happens. The way something, you need to let something expand before it shrinks.
Got it.
And my clients feel more in control, not less in control. And that's when the feeling moves through them. So I encourage them to give permission to that feeling and again, do what's counterintuitive and make it bigger. So it will eventually, and it always subsides. So try that with your clients.
Cool.
And you could just say, would you be willing to make it bigger?
Mm.
Yeah. Little tip. Okay. But sometimes I think what happens is, and I noticed this with coaches, is like we have people go into their body, right? And kind of that's where Rachel got stuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she went in her body, you know, Linda articulated where it was, and then what?
Yeah.
Right? So that could have been a strategy, right, to use with Linda. Let's make that feeling as big as possible. So that she could maybe feel safe in feeling those feelings. She went a different route, but that is a route you could have taken. And since this is the art of coaching, there is no right or wrong way.
Would you go to the ACT tool at that point where you're asking what color it is and in this case?
So, yeah, is that... Do they do that in ACT with ask what color it is? And
well, Martha demonstrated that in one of our calls with her, but we never really got clear on that. It wasn't in our binder that it went to.
Yeah.
I thought she called it ACT.
It may be. So it's just a way, I mean, ACT, the basic tenet is mindfulness and kind of being the observer. And so it's a way for you to create and to create some cognitive diffusion. And so, yes, that is kind of a cognitive diffusion technique because it's asking you to be the observer of the feeling and describe it. So you could say, what color is it? What temperature is it? Where is it in your body? So that you're not fusing with that feeling. You're able to take a step back and describe it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it just, I think it helps when you can get in touch with what it is you're feeling. That is your antenna, right? I mean, that is usually your guide. And that will indicate, you know, often, if you take it even further, what emotions are bubbling up or what thought is fueling that those feelings. Then you'll be able to determine where's the dirty paint here that's causing these feelings. Or is it clean pain? Or is it just a body compass reading that's saying no to this thing, no to hanging out with these people, no to taking this job, yes to, or conversely, yes. Yes to, you know, saying, doing the speaking engagement. And that's why we check in with the body so much. Because the more that your client is in touch with their body, the more you're going to say, wow, I know that feeling that comes in my body when I want to say yes to something, even though it scares me. I know that shackles on feeling I experience when I say yes to something that really I don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, we could talk about coaching all day long, right? I mean, fascinating, isn't it? I know, it's like nonsense. All right, you guys. So I have now gone over officially. All right. Thanks so much. And I know that I'd love for those of you who haven't coached, like Meg, I don't think you've coached in a while. And Kristen, you haven't coached in a while. So do you guys want to maybe volunteer? I don't want to put you on the spot. But
sure. No, I'll volunteer for next time.
Okay. Who's that, Kristen?
Yeah.
Okay. And Meg, you know, I'd love for you to have the opportunity to, if you're open to that. So think about it and just post on the
phone. We have 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, so we're not meeting next week. It's the 4th of July, so we'll maybe be meeting in 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
Okay? All right. Have a great weekend. I mean, weekend. I'm already thinking of the weekend. All right, you guys. Awesome job today.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jackie.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.